Q and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Recorded from our studio in the Bishopbriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUEANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com. That's information@CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling us on 0141 772 3979. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times Sport, April 2. McCoist admits Old Firm fear over crazy hate crime law. Report by David Irvin. Ali McCoist has admitted his fears that there could be 48,000 breaches of Scotland's new hate crime laws in the match between Rangers and Celtic, as he branded the guidance madness. The Ibrox hero is concerned supporters could be targeted, as he conceded some actions may fall foul of the new regulations in Scotland. The Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act, passed by MSPs in 2021, consolidated existing hate crime legislation and creates a new offence of stirring up hatred against protected characteristics. The new law creates stirring up of hatred offences and gives greater protection to certain groups. These include age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, and transgender identity. McCoist hammered the new laws as crazy as he detailed his concerns on TalkSport. He explained, "We've got a hate bill, by the way. A hate bill has been passed in the country. And I can guarantee you, next Sunday at Ibrox, I, along with 48,000, will be committing a breach of that hate bill in the particular Rangers versus Celtic game we are all going to. It is madness." That's exactly what the police think. Impossible to enforce. The police spokesperson has come out and more or less said that. He obviously cannot, because he'll get himself in trouble. He has implied it. Everybody with two brain cells in their head knows it's madness, crazy. There's nobody in our country who thinks that is a good idea whom I have spoken to. Under guidance, hate crimes can include threatening behaviour, verbal abuse or insults, including name-calling, assaults, robbery and damage to property, like graffiti daubed on walls. The new laws also cover those who encourage others to commit hate crimes, harassment, online abuse on sites like Facebook or X, now known as Twitter. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, April 2. The Islander aiming to make history. Report by Susan Egglestaff. For many, carrying the hopes of an entire colony of islands would feel more than a little burdensome. But for Cara Hanlon, such a responsibility is a privilege she could never have imagined herself bearing. Hanlon hails from Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis in the Western Isles, and to say she's blazing a trail would be an understatement. The British Swimming Championships, which double as the Olympic trials for Paris 2024, begin today in London, and over the course of the next 6 days Hanlon will aim to make history by becoming the first ever swimmer from the Western Isles to make it to an Olympic Games. Such a prospect means the breaststroker has quite a weight upon her shoulders, but rather than feel bogged down by such pressure, it is immediately apparent upon speaking to the 26-year-old that she is thrilled by the prospect of proving that Islanders are just as capable of achieving great things as those from any other corner of Scotland. Says Hanlon, "I'd be so proud to be the first from the islands to get to the Olympics. I want to do it not just for me, but for the islands too. It would show that it doesn't matter where you're from. If you work hard and you're dedicated to your sport, you can make it from anywhere. I'd love to tell that story. It does feel like there would be a wider meaning to me getting to the Olympics. Island culture can be quite closed off sometimes, so to show that you can dream bigger than that is something I really hold on to." Hanlon's journey to this point has been far from orthodox. Her early days of training were conducted in a 12.5 metres pool, a quarter of the length of an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and any examples of islanders who had done what she was aspiring to were entirely absent from her day-to-day life. Hanlon, who is now based in Edinburgh, initially became aware of the Olympics as an 11-year-old during the Beijing Games in 2008, but it then took years for her dream to become a realistic target. She says, "I remember watching Beijing 2008 and thinking it was so cool. Then during London 2012, I started thinking I really want to be a part of that." Over the years though, the dream comes and goes, and a few years ago, if you'd asked me if I thought I would ever get to an Olympics, I'd probably have said no. I just didn't think I was good enough. I'm a very realistic person, and I didn't think I'd get good enough to be in with a chance. But over the past few years, that's changed, and it's gone from having the dream of making it, but thinking it probably wouldn't happen, to now having the chance right in front of me. Qualification for Paris 2024 is by no means a pipe dream for Hanlon. She goes into this week's British Trials as a two-time defending champion in the 100 metres breaststroke, and although she'll need to swim faster than she ever has to secure the Great Britain's Olympic qualifying standard, finding the half a second that's required seems a far from insurmountable challenge for the Scottish record holder, particularly as she's back on track following an injury-interrupted season last year. The monumental importance of the next few days is not lost on Hanlon. Having missed out on selection for Tokyo 2020, she's well aware of the cutthroat nature of British swimming's selection policy, but she is insistent that she will not become distracted by what is at stake over the coming week, and instead will focus as much as possible on what she needs to do in the water. And she says, "It's been a daily challenge putting what's riding on these trials out of my head. Some days I don't think about Olympic qualification at all, and other days it's quite heavy. So it's about navigating those feelings. Of course I'm going to feel nervous, so it's just about coping with those feelings. It does feel different being defending champion, but at the same time, I know I can only control what I can control. If I can put my races together in the way I've been doing in training, then hopefully I've got a good outcome coming my way. I'm always going to put more pressure on myself than anyone else ever put on me, especially when it comes to Olympic trials. But it is definitely a weakness to think too much about actually getting to the Olympics. Over the next few days, I want to leave everything in the pool and use all the emotions to bring out the best in me." other Scots in the hunt for British titles and selection for Paris 2024 this week are Olympic medalists Duncan Scott and Kathleen Dawson, as well as Katie Shanahan, Lucy Hope and Kiana McInnes. Report by Susan Egglestaff. Evening Times Sport, April 3. Todd Cantwell in ego admission. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Todd Cantwell has spoken for the first time about being substituted in the first half of the Europa League game against Aris Limassol this season, and revealed that he had talks with Rangers manager Philippe Clement about the tough moment. However, the playmaker stressed that he has no difficulties parking his ego and putting the team first, and emphasised that he has a strong relationship with, as well as the utmost respect for, Clement ahead of the Celtic game on Sunday. The Englishman was hooked by his Belgian coach 9 minutes before half-time and replaced by young winger Ross McCausland in the Group C encounter with Aris at Ibrox back in November. Being taken off in the first half of a game is considered to be the ultimate indignity for a professional footballer, and the technically gifted forward confessed that it had been a difficult experience for him to leave the field at that stage. But Rangers were trailing their Cypriot rivals 1-0 at the time, and Clement wanted to have more width in his team. So he put on McCausland, and the Northern Ireland international scored a second half equaliser to secure a vital point for the hosts. Cantwell, who had given the ball away to the visitors shortly before Xavi Babica had broken the deadlock, spoke to his manager in the aftermath of a 1-1 draw, which guaranteed European football after Christmas. But he stated that he had put the incident firmly behind him and was enjoying helping the Viaplay Cup winners in their bid to complete a world record equaling 8th domestic treble. He said, "No player wants to be that player. Listen, me and the manager have had a lot of conversations, and I have got a lot of respect for the manager. I think he is a good person, as well as a good manager. For me, personally, in football, you have to hide your ego a little bit sometimes, and you have to understand that things are not always done for your best interest. It is the club's best interest. I think we have got a manager on our hands who cares very, very much about the club. I won't go into it, but we had a very honest conversation, and it was a very respectful conversation, and I think it has been very positive on the pitch and off the pitch. Yes, me and the manager are in a really good place." Cantwell, who is set to start in his favoured position in the hugely important Sinch Premiership game against defending Scottish champion Celtic at Ibrox on Sunday, has performed consistently well for Rangers in the months since the Aris game. Asked if he thought that working with Clement had made him a better player, he said, "I think you could argue that. It is definitely a different number 10 role to the number 10 role I was playing under Michael Beale, the former manager. But listen, as a footballer, you have to be able to adapt, and you have to bring different parts of your game. That is something the manager has really honed in with me. I would like to think I do have a good attitude. The club is always more important than any individual. I believe that. It is probably more important here than at most clubs. For me, it is being at the right end of the trophies at the end of the season. For me, that would be a good season." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, April 3. Heart on Undying Celtic Love. Report by Graeme McGarry. The news that away allocations will be restored to a reasonable level come the start of next season will come too late for Joe Hart to get a proper feel for what the Old Firm Derby used to be, with his Celtic career coinciding with the ticking tit-for-tat that is finally grinding towards a resolution. Not that having only a small wedge of Ibrox backing his team, or more recently no fans at all, has diminished the experience for the former England number one, who is savouring these final months in a Celtic jersey before hanging up his gloves for good in the summer. He admits, though, that he's looking forward to perhaps snagging a ticket to come along and back his old team at some point in the future, with Hart saying that although he may be leaving Celtic in the summer, the club will never leave him. Whether we will ever see him brandishing a megaphone and leading the Celtic support in song, like another former custodian of his position, Artur Boroch, is doubtful, but the position and passion that Hart feels for the club is just as heartfelt and will likely linger just as long. So as he gears up for his final taste of Ibrox as a player this Sunday, without the Celtic supporters, he is also casting an eye towards the future and relishing the day that he will be able to come back up to Glasgow and join their number. Said Hart, "I genuinely look forward to supporting this club forever. It's a part of me. This is me removing myself from a guy who doesn't want to talk about what's next, but I look forward to being a football supporter at some point in my life. And this is one of the teams I'll be a fan of. I'm going to remove myself from the situation I'm in now, because my immediate reaction is that it means nothing to me, the restoration of away allocations. But if I was to take away the guy I'll be when it's going on, it'll be great. It'll be a real buzz. I've played in a 50-50 split here when it was at Hampden, and it was electric. Whether you come out good side or come out the bad side, it is emotional. Since I've been here, we've had fans. I think the most has been 700 to 750, and it was strange at the start of the season, winning away and having no one to put your gratitude towards. Because even though we played without supporters that day, you still feel it in the build-up to have your support and your club behind you, so it will be nice, it will be a great spectacle. Around the world, this fixture is heavily respected, and to keep that respect, you need away supporters in there. You never know, I might be one of those couple of thousand." All that being said, Hart has still enjoyed the Old Firm experience, having not known it any other way. As he mentioned, while the fans may not be present in the stadium when the Celtic players step out of the tunnel this weekend, the players know that there are tens of thousands with them in spirit and backing them to the hilt. So there is no doubting whatsoever that each Celtic player knows exactly what is at stake and who they are representing when they cross that white line at a vociferously partisan Ibrox. For Hart, there is no escaping the magnitude of the fixture, both in terms of what the outcome will mean in the context of the title race and what it means to the fans of both clubs. He said, "If people don't know, then they don't know. I do know, and I know the build-up to these games is huge. The emotion to these games is huge. If you're not winning worldwide acclaim or awards, who cares? When you're in it, when you're emotionally invested, I don't care what anyone says. I know how it feels." Report by Graeme McGarry. Evening Times Sport, April 3. McCoist reveals he will not attend Old Firm game. Report by David Irvin. Rangers' Ali McCoist has revealed he will not be at Ibrox for Sunday's crucial clash against Celtic, as he played down criticism over his remarks on the new hate crime laws in Scotland. The Ibrox legend had come under intense scrutiny and criticism after branding the new laws madness and crazy, and suggesting 48,000 fans, including himself, could fall foul of the law at the Derby fixture. However, McCoist has now broken his silence on the fallout over his comments and played down the response as he revealed he would not even be in attendance at Ibrox on Sunday. Alan Brazil on TalkSport referenced criticism and coverage of McCoist's claims as he said, "I see you have made some of the front pages." But McCoist wasted little time on the subject as he said, "I'm over it. I seem to have upset a few people." Then quizzed on whether he would be at the vital title race encounter, McCoist revealed, "No, I'm not actually. I will be away with the kids for a couple of days. People are accusing me of going to break this act, but I'm not even going to be at this game, which I thought I would be, but we are away for a couple of days." McCoist had said on Tuesday morning, "We've got a hate bill, by the way. A hate bill has been passed in the country. And I guarantee you, next Sunday at Ibrox, along with 48,000, will be committing a breach of that hate bill in the particular Rangers versus Celtic game we're all going to. It is madness. The Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act, passed by MSPs in 2021, consolidated existing hate crime legislation and creates a new offence of stirring up hatred against protected characteristics. The new law creates stirring up of hatred offences and gives greater protection to certain groups, which include age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, and transgender identity." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, April 4. Motherwell announce agreement with United States-based investor. Report by David Irvin. Motherwell Chiefs have reached an agreement with a United States-based investor. The Fir Park club have announced talks with an American family will proceed to the next stage after an agreement on a non-binding head of terms. Motherwell's executive board had been seeking external investment and will now work on formalising a legal framework to take forward to a shareholder vote. It is claimed the investor has expressed a desire to work in partnership with the Well Society as part of the deal. The club advised the process to formalise ahead of terms is likely to take around 6 weeks. A statement on the club website read, "The executive board of the club would like to confirm that investment discussions with a United States-based family have reached a point where both parties wish to move forward to the next stage and have therefore entered into an agreement on a non-binding heads of terms. Both parties will now work on formalising these into a legal framework which can be put to a shareholders' vote. The investor has expressed his desire to work in partnership with the Well Society. The process of formalising the heads of terms is likely to take around 6 weeks and will keep you updated on progress." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, April 4. Rory McIlroy gets pre-master's lesson from former Tiger Woods coach. Rory McIlroy believes his lesson with Tiger Woods former coach Butch Harmon was really worthwhile, as he prepares to make his 10th attempt to complete a career Grand Slam. McIlroy needs to win the Masters to join Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus and Woods as the only players to have won all four major championships. The world number two started the year well with victory in the Dubai Desert Classic in January, but his form on the PGA Tour has been underwhelming ahead of this week's Valero Texas Open. McIlroy revealed on the I Can Fly podcast with PGA Tour professional Morgan Hoffman that he had recently visited Harmon in Las Vegas and expanded on the visit in his pre-tournament press conference in San Antonio. Said McIlroy, "I've done this a number of times in my career. I met Butch when I was 14 years old, so we've always had a good relationship. If there's one guy that I want to go and get a second opinion from, it's him. I think just after the Players' Championship, and just sort of struggling through that Florida swing and with some of the misses I was having with my irons, I just thought to myself, I'm obviously missing something here, and I just would love to go and get a second opinion and have him take a look, a second set of eyes. The one thing with Butch is you go spend time with him and you're always going to feel better about yourself at the end of it, whether you're hitting it better or not. He's sort of half golf coach, half psychologist in a way. It's fun to go out there. I went and spent probably 4 hours with him in Vegas. He said a couple of things to me that resonated. It's the same stuff that I've been trying to do with my coach, Michael Bannon, but he sort of just said it in a different way that maybe hit home with me a little bit more. It was a really worthwhile trip, and I feel like I've done some good work after that. As I said, this is a good week to see where that work has got me." Speaking before the Players' Championship last month, where he carded an opening 65 before fading to a tie for 19th, McIlroy revealed the reasons behind his current struggles. And he said, "I have this amazing feeling with my woods at the minute, but when I try to recreate that feeling with the irons, it starts left and goes further left. I have a swing thought for my woods, and I need a different swing thought for my irons, and that's what I've been working on over the last couple of days. I feel every other part of the game is in good shape." Report by Martin McMillan. Evening Times Sport, April 4. Old Firm referee appointment irrelevant to players. Report by Robbie Hanratty. Barry Ferguson is not bothered by the fact under fire referee John Beaton will take charge of this weekend's huge Old Firm clash. Rangers and Celtic go head to head at Ibrox on Sunday in a derby encounter that could have a huge bearing on the Scottish Premiership title race. Celtic currently hold a 1-point advantage, but have played a game more than their fierce Glasgow rivals. Hoops boss Brendan Rodgers was handed a one-match ban with another suspended for comments highlighting Beaton's competence following a defeat against Hearts a few weeks ago. While there's been intense scrutiny from both sets of opposers over the Whistler's appointment. However, Ferguson reckons the standard of officiating in general has been poor and believes any referee could be prone to a game-changing error given what he's witnessed across the league this season. "It didn't bother me in the slightest," said the former Rangers captain on Go Radio when asked about the choice of referee. "If I'm being honest, whether it's what happened a few weeks back at Tynecastle or 5 years ago, or 10 years ago. Whatever referee it is, I'm always nervous about decisions, certainly with VAR now. But people have got to remember, it was John Beaton that advised Don Robertson to go and look at the Yang high foot, obviously the penalty decision as well. I told you at the time that I thought it was never a sending off and it was never a penalty. But Don Robertson had to make the final decision on that. It was nothing to do with John Beaton. Fellow pundit Peter Grant then chimed in to agree with Ferguson's opinion, and the former Celtic midfielder claimed, "I think that's the problem everybody's got. You've had two referees that's actually had the opportunity to say that was wrong, but they didn't. And I think that's where all the hullabaloo has come from, more than anything else. We are talking here as footballers, well, ex-footballers, I should say, and the decisions were really poor. And for that standard of referee, top referee supposed to be in the respect of that, that shouldn't be the case." Ferguson came back in and argued, "It's not just the Hearts and Celtic game. All the games that I've watched, most of the decisions have actually baffled me. But in terms of referee Beaton, it will not mean a jot to the Rangers players or the Celtic players come Sunday at 12 o'clock once that whistle goes." Report by Robbie Hanratty. Evening Times Sport, April 5. Graeme McGarry cautions, "Open minds, but caution advised over Motherwell investment." Fundamentally, the news this week that Motherwell have entered into a non-biting heads of terms with a United States-based family has not materially changed my viewpoint on potential investment or really changed the situation as yet. I, like many others, I would guess, am not entirely against the idea of outside investment, but it all depends on what the club will be giving away in order to secure it. My red line would be ceding of the Well Society's majority shareholding, but I also have misgivings about giving away any sort of shareholding in the club if that was not in exchange for a commensurate level of investment. As yet, we do not officially know the figures involved in terms of either the proposed level of investment or the identity of the investors. So until both of these points are clarified, there is very little to go on in terms of judging whether this would be a good thing for Motherwell or not. Some notes of caution though. There is no doubt that outgoing chairman Jim McMahon is a Motherwell man and will, I am sure, be looking to leave a legacy at the club when he steps down in the summer. However, I hope that his eagerness to show that the investment video that was his brainchild and that he personally financed has been a success does not blind his judgment, and that he does not end up driving this through to its conclusion, even if it is not in the best long-term interests of the club. There is also some confusion when it comes to his mandate for doing so. The executive board, of course, has a duty to seek out investment if they feel that is what the club requires. But the fact that the Well Society board has not been directly involved in this process suggests something of the tail wagging the dog. The Well Society, let's not forget, are the owners of the club, and their statement on Thursday evening, distancing themselves from this process, suggests a great deal of scepticism from their side around the potential deal. This is a democracy, of course, and just as society members voted to retain an openness to investment, so too Will they eventually be asked to ratify whatever this deal may be? This is where crystallizing exactly what any investment will mean to the club and its future will be vital. I suspect that a great many of the members who did not vote on that first point will engage more when there is something concrete to consider and something that could potentially affect the future of the club, for better or for worse. There may be many who will see the promise of foreign investment and think that more money cannot possibly be a bad thing. But there is, of course, a litany of cautionary tales throughout the recent history of the Scottish game to ensure that caution is advised. Investment could be a good thing, and the Well Society board themselves have said they are encouraged by the noises coming from the potential investors that they would like to work with the society rather than sideline it. So let's move forward with an open mind, but with a healthy dollop of scepticism too. The devil will be in the detail, says Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, April 5. Joy of the journey for St Mirren in push for Europe. Report by David Irvine. It's not about the destination. The joy is in the journey. Well, whoever first penned that phrase, apart from causing an Instagram caption epidemic, certainly never experienced the trials and tribulations of making the top six in the Scottish Premiership. All right, that's a niche experience, but they did not follow a football club, that's for sure. Football is a results business, and for St Mirren, stock is up in recent seasons. This weekend presents the opportunity to confirm their spot in the top six for a second year running. Throw into the mix the legitimate hope of a European place, and it is understandable that feelings in Fergus Lee would be at a high. That said, it's worth reflecting on the rocky road that has led to this moment. Just this week, I stumbled across a post on X. Glancing back at very different emotions 2 years ago. In the wake of a 4-2 defeat to Motherwell, there were comparisons made between Stephen Robinson and Alan Stubbs, and wild accusations of a manager who had lost the dressing room. History proves both takes to be wildly inaccurate, but also points to a fairly remarkable rise in results and growing expectations in Paisley. It's fitting that the club played Motherwell last weekend and left disappointed with a 1-1 draw. That's progress. That's the journey. Of course, there will be the obvious and largely correct verdict that the finishing place is all that matters and performances, nearly moments and horror shows mean nothing come crunch time. It's taken a while personally to adopt the position of revelling in the journey, but once you do, wow, it's exhilarating, it's exhausting, it's encapsulating. There is nothing like it. A European spot would mean the world to everyone associated with Saints, but it's not the be-all and end-all. The same goes for the top six. It is something to always strive for, but it certainly does not define following the football club. Don't forget the anxious moments watching scores trickle in around the grounds elsewhere to seal a top half finish, or being ridiculed as a TikToker strolled in a cameo appearance in a Renfrewshire Cup tie. Another thing, Ryan Strain's return brings another dimension to St Mirren. Elvis Bawom Ono and Ryan Flynn deputised well enough, but Strain is a phenom in the Buddies' lineup. Not only is he a more than adequate defender, he also causes endless troubles to opposition rearguards. Even in the 45-minute showing at Fir Park, Strain was a handful. The Australian international was the difference last time Hearts were in Paisley. And if St Mirren are to be successful once more, then there's reason to believe he will play a major role. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, April 5. McInnes praises Killy backroom team. Report by Lana Mackay. Kilmarnock boss Derek McInnes is heaping praise on his backroom staff and insists everyone has a role to play in the club's fantastic season so far. Assistant manager Paul Sheeran and first team coaches Alan Archibald and Craig Clark are all at the centre of the Killy manager's plaudits after the East Ayrshire side cemented top six status at the weekend. McInnes made the decision to rejig the backroom staff last summer, following Tony Docherty's departure to Dundee United. He said it is important for a manager to know when to make changes, to keep that freshness and keep ideas right, recognising when to give it a wee jag here and there. Docherty's former assistant manager role was filled by Paul Sheeran, who worked with McInnes at St Johnstone. Sheeran has climbed the ranks at Killy since joining the coaching staff in January 2022 after he was sacked as Falkirk manager. Commented McInnes, Paul Sheeran went from first team coach to assistant manager. He's always been a member of my staff. I made him reserve manager at St Johnstone when I was there. I brought him to Aberdeen and I brought him here. He's got a good manner about him. He's been a manager before and he thinks like a manager. Former Partick Thistle boss Alan Archibald also came in as first team coach as part of the backroom staff shake-up. McInnes said of his former Dundee United teammate, Archie was a youth coach at Motherwell, and I just thought he was better than that role, not to decry the role at Motherwell, because Motherwell were good enough to give him the opportunity. But I wanted him working with me at first team level. When the opportunity arose, I moved quickly. He was my first phone call. The Killy manager also praised first team technical coach Craig Clark, citing his great work ethic and eagerness to learn. He's been a brilliant member of staff in terms of analysing opponents, good on the training pitch. I feel we're really fortunate at Kilmarnock to have a really strong staff. Any time a team has a season that's better than a lot of people have expected, there are a lot of things go right with that. It's boardroom level, your backroom staff, your coaching staff, and your players most importantly. Everyone has a role to play. Report by Lana Mackay. Evening Times Sport, April 5. Five-star Scottish resort appoints new head of golf. Report by Kirsty Bossy. A luxury West Coast resort, safe from administration, has appointed a new head of golf as the venue looks to rival destinations such as Cameron House and Gleneagles. Christopher McQueen is taking over responsibility for the championship 18-hole course at Mar Hall on the banks of the River Clyde in Bishopton. A professional golfer, he comes to the post with extensive experience, having previously worked at Gledoch Resort and Spa and the Trump Turnberry Resort. Mr. McQueen will oversee extensive improvement works at the course with support from newly appointed head greenkeeper Andrew Eckford, who brings 13 years of experience in greenkeeping from Cameron House in Loch Lomond. As part of the upgrade programme, all bunkers have been repaired with a total sand replacement, while the greens have undergone an aeration process and will be continuously top dressed throughout the year along with the fairways. Other improvements include a new automated irrigation system, a fertilisation and disease control process to protect the grounds, and the purchase of 12 new golf buggies. The work is part of a multi-million pound renovation at Mar Hall, which was brought out of administration in December last year by Dubai-based Dutco Group, with support from asset management firm Align Partners. Mr. McQueen and Mr. Eckford are among a raft of senior appointments announced by the resort's new owners. Report by Kirsty Dorsey. Evening Times Sport, April 5. Taylor Swift video made impact on Motherwell investor arrival. Report by Lana Mackay. Motherwell manager Stuart Kettlewell has admitted the club's viral Taylor Swift video has had an impact on drawing in new investors to Fir Park. The tongue-in-cheek video, released in January, aimed to attract funds from Hollywood A-listers, including a plea to pop sensation Taylor Swift to give some dosh, and it appears to have worked. After a club statement on Wednesday confirmed discussions with a United States-based family over potential investment have reached the next stage, Kettlewell conceded the video may have played a part, although he denies having watched it himself. He said, "There were a number of potential external investment options that were there that weren't before that video was released. I wasn't involved with that one, which possibly tells you something. It's not really my bag. But from the outside looking in, it does seem to have had an impact in drawing people in. For me, it was a blank canvas before, and now there are options we didn't have beforehand." The Motherwell boss has previously outlined one of his long-term goals at Fir Park is to ensure his team are consistently in the running for the top six and European football. Kettlewell, whose side currently sit eighth in the Singe Premiership table and 6 points off sixth place, believes new investment could be the catalyst needed to spark evolution at the club. He commented, "I've always hoped for more. I always want evolution in myself, in our dressing room and across our club at every single level, commercial, on the field, off the field, and in the community. I think if we're standing still, we're going backwards. That's always been my mindset. We can't just settle and rest on our laurels. Anything that can help and contribute to this football club becoming better and setting our goals higher has to be a good thing." Brushing off any comparisons to Bournemouth owner Bill Foley's £6 million investment into Hibs, the Motherwell manager said, "There are different levels in terms of what's happened at Hibs and what's being proposed here, but anything that can add on has to be welcomed. We're quite clearly sitting at the bottom end of this league in terms of budget. For all managers, we're always looking to strengthen our group. Earlier this season, we struggled when we got a couple of key injuries and it limited our options. We became a bit predictable. Looking at this as an opportunity to potentially bring in players and strengthen, then I'm always going to welcome it. It's still a big if, as this was only a small step towards that. But if it happens, then as a football department, the goal for us is to progress up the table and build a stronger squad. We have a plan for this summer already, We'll see where it goes. As the statement indicates, there is still a timescale to go and stages to pass. The club says the process of formalising the terms of their current non-binding agreement with a potential investor will take around 6 weeks, with updates to follow in the coming months. Despite the inevitable buzz generated by new investment talks, Kettlewell, who was appointed as Motherwell's permanent manager in February last year after a short spell in interim charge, is keeping his feet firmly on the ground. He said, "I don't get carried away with anything. I'm just a realist. I look at what we have guaranteed. You have to be as good as possible with what you have at your disposal right now. I think we've done that well. We maximise what we can do with what we've got. I think we're competitive compared to a lot of clubs in this division." That doesn't stop you having those thoughts of, what if? When it comes to stretching those boundaries and being a bit more competitive financially, you see this expectation of clubs like Motherwell, that it's a given we go out and beat a club like Aberdeen. I think we all know what financial levels those two clubs are at, and so I don't see that as a given. Looking ahead to next season, the Steelmen boss and former Ross County midfielder says it's too early to think about any financial boost to the club's recruitment aspirations in the summer. And he commented, "If there's any certainty on something, then I think it can provide a boost. If there's no certainty and it's not been rubber stamped, then it's harder, because you cannot definitely tell people you have anything more to play with. What I can say is that I have a budget set for next season. I work with that until such time I'm told it's different." Report by Lana Mackay. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Rodgers hails Celtic position. Report by Graham McGarry. Brendan Rodgers says that Celtic are in a really strong position in the title race, despite the late Rangers equaliser that denied his side victory at Ibrox. But the Celtic manager accused Ibrox midfielder Fabio Silva of simulation as he won the penalty that flipped a thrilling game on its head. Celtic had gone 2-0 up and were comfortable at half-time. But when Celtic defender Alistair Johnson was penalised for a foul on Silva following a VAR check, allowing Rangers captain James Tavernier to score from the spot, Rodgers felt that the momentum shifted in the contest. The hosts then drew level before Adam Ida stunned Ibrox by putting Celtic ahead once again just a minute later, before Rabi Matondo's injury time effort ensured that the spoils were shared. Despite his disappointment at that late leveller and his annoyance at Silva, Rodgers was pleased with the performance of his players, and he is more than satisfied with his team's position in the Premiership. Celtic remain a point ahead of their City rivals, with Rangers having a game in hand against Dundee on Wednesday night. But with a match between the sides at Celtic Park to come, Rodgers is confident the champions are well placed. Said Rodgers, "It puts us in a really strong position. We still have a lot of work to do, still 6 games to go. But when you have your nearest rival still to play at home, in front of 60,000, and you know you're going to be stronger again to that moment, I'm very happy with that. It was a fantastic game to be involved in. Super proud of the team, how we played and managed the occasion. The first half was absolutely brilliant. Couldn't have been more comfortable in the game. Some of the level of our football. We attacked with the ball, attacked without it, and could have been more comfortable by half time. Disappointed with the penalty. That gives them a little up in the game whenever we were clearly the much better team. Ali, who is on a booking, has to be really careful in the second half with the timing of his tackles, and I thought he was perfect with it. I thought the referee got it absolutely right on the field. He connected with the ball. The player simulates, and it was right. So clearly then, they score the penalty. It goes to 2-1, and then you expect something from Rangers. They obviously get a deflected goal to take it to 2-2, and then you've got to dig in, show your heart, and show your desire, as well as your football. Then we get the third goal, a fantastic goal by Adam, trying to see it through, and then Matondo scores a brilliant goal. But the whole thing was leaving here today with the performance, and still with everything in our hands. I think what we showed today was at the level of our football, players coming back to fitness, how we could deal with pressure and manage the pressure. So proud of the team. Rodgers admits that his players were a little down in the dressing room after the game, but he says that when the initial sting of Matondo's goal wears off, the bigger picture will become clearer to them. And he believes their performance proved a lot of the doubters wrong. He continued, "It is great we can come here." And I said to players afterwards, I can see they were disappointed they had not won. For a team that has been written off and told they are going through the motions all year, I think we definitely turned up. This is the business end of the season, and we are ready to turn up. I have nothing but positivity in how mentally they were in the game, how they approached the game, the courage they played with, and knowing the back we have going forward. It will be immense and be huge for us. Meanwhile, Rodgers has revealed that he always knew Matt O'Reilly was going to dink the penalty that put Celtic 2 ahead in the first half, with the manager almost as cool as his midfielder as he produced a cheeky finish at such a critical moment. When asked if his heart was in his mouth when O'Reilly produced the chip, he said, "No, it wasn't actually. He has wanted to take penalties. He came into my office a few months back and said, 'Listen, if you want to change penalty takers, I am here.' He had practiced that. He said he was going to dink it down the middle, and he did that." Report by Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Celtic have serious concerns over coin throwing at Ibrox. Report by Ewan Payton. Celtic say they will enter discussion with Rangers about their serious concerns following objects being thrown in the direction of the away dugout during yesterday's derby. On the pitch, fans enjoyed a pulsating match at Ibrox as the Premiership's title-chasing pair played out a fantastic 3-3 draw. However, off the park, there were unsavoury scenes as objects were thrown at members of the Celtic staff at pitch side. Prior to the hour mark, Sky Sports commentator Ian Crocker revealed that John Kennedy appeared to be struck by missiles thrown from the home crowd, and this incident is now the subject of a Police Scotland investigation. Two police officers could be seen in conversation with assistant manager Kennedy, with coins believed to be the objects thrown. In a short statement, Celtic have hit out at the incident, stating they will be going to Rangers over the unacceptable matter. A Celtic spokesperson said, "It is totally unacceptable that our staff have once again been targeted in this way. We will be raising our serious concerns with Rangers, and we understand that the matter is currently being investigated by Police Scotland." A Police Scotland spokesperson added, "We are aware of an object being thrown at Ibrox Stadium. One man was struck but did not require treatment, and inquiries are ongoing. It is understood a small number of reports were received by the force relating to hate crimes during the match, with these being assessed and inquiries ongoing. Meanwhile, a heated exchange between Todd Cantwell and Callum McGregor spat an on-field rammy after the game, as Beaton called time on a pulsating derby match between Glasgow's Big Two at Ibrox, a coming together of players from both sides occurred. Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Clément insists Rangers have more cause to complain about VAR. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Philippe Clément claimed that Rangers had emerged from the third Old Firm game of the season as moral winners, despite being held to a 3-3 draw by Celtic. Clément's side, who have a game in hand against Dundee at Dens Park to play on Wednesday night, squandered a chance to leapfrog Brendan Rodgers' team into top spot in the Cinch Premiership table. However, the Belgian was impressed with how his side fought back after falling 2-0 and 3-2 down, and is still upbeat about the Govan club's chances of lifting the Scottish title come May, even though they remain a point behind the defending champions. He said, "I was not so happy about the beginning. My Scottish assistant Alex Ray has a word for that I better not use. It is the worst start you can have in an Old Firm game, to go behind after 1 minute, also in the way we went behind. That is a big blow in that moment for the team, for the fans. Afterwards, we didn't go down, but we were not good enough on the ball. It was also a special situation today with the wind. It was difficult to play really good combination play, but we didn't manage to do enough. That is frustrating to go 2-0 into half time. Then, second half, we showed our real face. We showed the real things that I want to see. This never-stopping team that has a lot of resilience, a lot of hunger and desire to change the result, to do the right thing, to create chances and not give away chances. We clearly deserve at least a point today with what we have shown. I think at the end we are moral winners of this afternoon, because a few months ago, for sure, not this team could have reacted after 2-0 in an Old Firm. I don't know if many teams in the past could have done it. It is a hard thing in a very important game to go 2-0 behind, to also feel the disappointment of your fans when you go into the dressing room to turn that around. Because of that, I'm really proud of my boys." Asked where he felt the result left Rangers in the Scottish title race, Clément said, "I don't have any control of that. We're going to go game by game." Clément was unhappy that Celtic were awarded a penalty for a Conor Goldson handball in the first half, but he felt that Rangers deserved to be given a spot kick for an Alistair Johnson foul on Fabio Silva, and said, "I think if somebody kicks your knee, then it's a penalty. If that's not a penalty anymore, then I don't know what is. I think the referee and VAR did a really good job today, although I was disappointed at not getting the Cyril Dessers goal for a small foul in our half. With that, and then this penalty, I think we had much more reason to be unhappy about things. But we are not, because the referee and VAR did a good job today, and if that's the case, we need to see it. But I think every manager in the world, every player in the world, wants this handball rule to be changed. I know with the rule it is a penalty now, but if a ball is brought in at that speed in front of goal, and it is touched by the head and is deflected, and you jump up at that moment and you want to take your arm away, but it touches your arm. With the rules now, it is a penalty. So nothing to say about the decision of the referee or the VAR, but everyone who is playing football says too many penalties are given in that way. James Tavernier, the Rangers captain, allowed Celtic winger Dazen Maeda to score after just seconds, but Clement was impressed at how the right back recovered from his mistake and sparked a second half comeback with a well-taken penalty. And he said, he showed the personality to take the penalty, and to take the penalty in that way, with really big conviction, desire to score the goal, and to put the perfect penalty away. It's not easy, and a lot of players break after making a fault like that at the beginning of the game. They go down the way. But he has the capacity to switch on again and to be even more hungry. There are concerns that Rangers' game in hand against Dundee on Tayside on Wednesday night might not go ahead as scheduled because of the state of the Dens Park pitch, or might need to be moved to a different venue. Asked if he was worried about the impact which the heavy rain that has been forecast for the coming days might have on the playing surface, he said, "No, because it is not my task. I try to control the controllables. I put all my energy, my attention every second into that. I don't control the weather forecast. I am not a groundsman. My wife knows I am really bad in that. I have other qualities and I will focus on that. They are also not our responsibility. They are the responsibilities of Dundee and of the league to see that the product of football that the broadcaster pay a lot of money for is played in a normal way." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Matondo on embracing pre-match challenge. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Rangers winger Rabi Matondo has revealed that he scored his stunning injury time equaliser against Celtic at Ibrox yesterday after being urged to emulate a Kevin De Bruyne strike for Manchester City by his manager Philippe Clement. The Welsh international curled a long-range strike beyond Joe Hart and into the top right corner in the third minute of added-on time to ensure that his side drew 3-3 with their Glasgow rivals in the Cinch Premiership match. It was a hugely important strike as it keeps the Govan club, who have a game in hand to play against Dundee at Dens Park on Wednesday night, a point behind the defending champions in the league table. Matondo, who had netted an identical goal in the 3-1 win over Hibs at Ibrox 8 days earlier, admitted that he had been challenged by Clement to try to match one of De Bruyne's goals in City's 4-2 triumph over Crystal Palace on Saturday before the kick-off. He said, "I ran over to him after I scored, because before the game we were speaking and he asked me if I saw Kevin De Bruyne's goal. We work a lot in training and he works a lot with me on cutting in and getting shots off and keeping it low in the corners. So I said to him, yes, I did see De Bruyne's goal, but it wasn't quite low in the corner the way he wants me to do it. But he said that when you get to that level, like De Bruyne has, that's basically his low corner, the top corner. So he said, you'll get there maybe one day. And I said, I'll show you today. And yeah, I think I showed it quite well. So I ran over to him to embrace him, and it was nice. Do you know what? I can't really remember it right now, it's all a blur. It happened so quick. I just thought to take my man on and just get a shot off, and thankfully it's flown into the top corner. Asked if it was the biggest goal of his career, he said, 100%, especially in a game like this. We know how much it means to everyone involved with Rangers, so to get a goal like that and to help the team get something from the game was obviously a moment I'll keep forever. Matondo admitted that Clement's half-time team talk had made the difference for Rangers and predicted the Ibrox club would take great confidence from the fight back and result. And he said, it was positive because the way the game started. It wasn't ideal. The first half was kind of sticky, but we came in at half-time and the gaffer gave us his message. He even said that he didn't recognise the team he's been working with for the last 5 months. And obviously the boys took that to heart, and it showed. He just said we need to find the courage and mentality, get playing and be confident, not be afraid. I feel we did that in the second half. His message helped. Matondo added, James Tavernier stepped up to take a penalty like that, and it's unbelievable, because he's obviously missed his last two. To step up like that, and the way the game started, for him to hit it into the top corner, that takes some courage. Fair play to him, and the boys kicked on from there. We improved in the second half. It showed mental strength from everyone. The first half wasn't the best from us, and we showed in the second half what team that we are. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Old Firm clash decided nothing, says Matthew Lindsay. An Old Firm game, which was billed beforehand as a title decider by many in Scottish football, ended up raising as many questions as it answered. It was hard to say whether the 3-3 draw between the Glasgow rivals at Ibrox yesterday was a better result for Rangers or for Celtic, following the 90 exhilarating, incident-packed, captivating minutes. The home team, who trailed 2-0 at half-time and 3-2 in injury time, can be proud of the way they fought back to earn a draw and a point, which gives them the chance to move 2 points clear of their City rivals at the top of the Cinch Premiership table on Wednesday night. Yet, the visitors can also be satisfied with how they acquitted themselves in an intimidating arena. They will be quietly confident they can prevail against their age-old adversaries when they have 60,000 of their fans cheering them on at Parkhead following the split. Ravi Matondo curled in an equaliser in the third minute of added on time, and honours were even when John Beaton brought an end to the madness. They will not be level come the final game in May, but who will come out on top remains anyone's guess. Here are 5 talking points from a classic derby encounter. A fast start. The noise generated by the 50,000 Rangers supporters who had shoehorned into Ibrox hoping to see their heroes win was deafening before kickoff. But the stadium fell silent after just 21 seconds when the visitors took the lead with a bizarre goal. James Tavernier failed to spot that Dazen Maeda was bearing down on him inside his own penalty box. His attempted clearance struck the shin of his opponent and spun beyond Jack Butland. It was one of the quickest goals in Old Firm history, but not the quickest. Chris Sutton, who was doing the co-commentary for host broadcaster Sky Sports and was looking on from the gantry in the main stand, broke the deadlock after just 19 seconds in a league game at Ibrox in December of 2002. Tavernier has, for all his strengths going forward, always been prone to a lapse in concentration at the back. It was another in a long line of costly errors. He did not buck his ideas up any either. He was dispossessed by Maeder just outside his area midway through the first half and was fortunate that Butland tipped a Matt O'Reilly header over his crossbar from the resulting attack. The Rangers captain, though, showed great character when he netted a second half penalty kick to get his side's comeback underway and take his tally for the 23-24 campaign to 23. Midfield maestros. Callum McGregor returned to the Celtic squad after recovering from an Achilles injury, but he had not played competitively since the end of February and was left on the substitutes bench by Rodgers. His omission meant that it was Japanese international Tomoki Iwata who slotted into the midfield alongside his countryman Ryo Hatate and O'Reilly. The Parkhead skipper had been the outstanding player in the first two derbies of the season. Would the visitors cope without their talismanic leader in Govan? Celtic took complete control in that crucial area of the park early on and did not relinquish it until well into the second half. Iwata, Hatate and O'Reilly dovetailed beautifully. Mohamed Diomond, making his debut in the fixture, struggled badly. John Lundstrom was often posted missing, and Tom Lawrence was anonymous. McGregor entered the fray in the 65th minute when he replaced Hatate, but he was not his normal self. He gave the ball away needlessly before the late Abdallah Sima goal that made it 2-2 and struggled to impose himself. Still, Brendan Rodgers was satisfied with how Celtic performed in the crucial area and predicted more is to come from them during the run-in. Absolutely outstanding, he said. The midfield's the jungle, that's where it's won. And all three played together really well. Tomo was excellent. He won the ball, passed it simple. Matty looked a threat. Rio elevates the team to the next level with his composure and his touch and play. These players will get fitter over these next coming weeks. Rangers' heart. This was a proverbial game of two halves for Rangers. They were abysmal in the opening 45 minutes and could consider themselves fortunate to only be 2-0 behind. But they were the better team after half-time. They continued fighting even after Adam Ida had put Celtic 3-2 in front at the death. Should their manager Philippe Clement be alarmed at how his charges started or encouraged by how they finished? He will have to make sure there is no repeat of their first half display in the remaining 7 league matches, beginning in their game in hand against Dundee at Dens Park in midweek. Petulant Silva. Wolves loanee Silva has done well for Rangers since arriving on loan during the January transfer window, despite being played out of position on the left of the front three due to injuries in recent weeks. He won his team a penalty when he went to ground following the slightest of touches from Alistair Johnson in the second half, and Sutton branded him a gold medal diver in typical antagonistic fashion. The player who rolled about on the turf as if he had been hooked by Tyson Fury in the first half, following another Johnson flashpoint, would be well advised to focus on football in the weeks ahead. He is an excellent player who has no need to indulge in such nonsense. Referee watch. John Beaton has had far quieter afternoons at the office. Beaton was urged to watch a replay of a Nicholas Kuhn corner by his bar colleague Nick Walsh in the first half, and correctly pointed to the spot after ruling that Connor Goldson handled the ball. O'Reilly converted. He showed Silver a yellow for simulation following the Johnson challenge in the second, but he reversed that decision and gave the host a penalty after viewing his pitch side monitor. It was, no doubt about it, a soft award, but contact had been made. The referee then chalked off a Cyril Dessers goal that had appeared to level the encounter for a foul by Lawrence on Iwata in the build-up. Both sets of supporters had their complaints after full time. VAR, though, got all the major calls correct, says Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Souness accuses biased Chris Sutton of Celtic VAR manipulation. Report by Johnny McFarlane. Graeme Souness has blasted Chris Sutton's commentary for Sky Sports during Rangers and Celtic's epic 3-3 draw as biased. The Ibrox legend watched the pulsating derby on TV and admits he was perplexed by Sutton's calling of incidents in the game. Sutton was furious when referee John Beaton was called to the VAR screen after booking Rangers striker Fabio Silva for going down in the box under a challenge from Alistair Johnson. The man in the middle overruled himself after seeing video evidence that the Portuguese was brought to the floor by contact to his knee from the Canadian international. And Souness feels there could be something more sinister at play in terms of Sutton's influence over referees. The Ibrox and Liverpool legend told TalkSport, "It's 100% a penalty, and I'll tell you, Silva is a diver. He's a diver and he's embarrassing himself. I'm sure they're talking about it up in Scotland, but that was a penalty. The defender cut him across the knees with his dangling foot. It's a penalty. He's brought him down. I'm reluctant to be in strong on Chris Sutton because he turned up at a charity event for me 2 weeks ago. We chatted together and he's funny. He did a bit for me and I thank him again for that. It was a dinner in Glasgow for the Deborah charity. But I cannot believe how biased Chris is when he's talking about Rangers. He was saying, it's embarrassing, it's not a penalty. It was a penalty. It's easily a penalty. It's not even a discussion to have. And I'm wondering, do VAR listen to the commentary during the game? Because I'm thinking Chris is going that strong here. He's trying to influence whoever could be listening in the VAR studio. VAR in Scotland is different. It's not at Stockley Park, is it? They've got their own VAR there. Do they listen to the commentary? I thought Chris has gone that mad on this. He's trying to influence someone in VAR. Report by Johnny McFarlane. Evening Times Sport, April 8. Souness accuses biased Chris Sutton of Celtic VAR manipulation. Report by Johnny McFarlane. Graeme Souness has blasted Chris Sutton's commentary for Sky Sports during Rangers and Celtic's epic 3-3 draw as biased. The Ibrox legend watched the pulsating derby on TV and admits he was perplexed by Sutton's calling of incidents in the game. Sutton was furious when referee John Beaton was called to the VAR screen after booking Rangers striker Fabio Silva for going down in the box under a challenge from Alistair Johnson. The man in the middle overruled himself after seeing video evidence that the Portuguese was brought to the floor by contact to his knee from the Canadian international. And Souness feels there could be something more sinister at play in terms of Sutton's influence over referees. The Ibrox and Liverpool legend told TalkSport, "It's 100% a penalty. And I'll tell you, Silva is a diver. He's a diver and he's embarrassing himself. I'm sure they're talking about it up in Scotland. But that was a penalty. The defender cut him across the knees with his dangling foot. It's a penalty. He's brought him down. I'm reluctant to be in strong on Chris Sutton, because he turned up at a charity event for me 2 weeks ago. We chatted together, and he's funny. He did a bit for me, and I thank him again for that. It was a dinner in Glasgow for the Deborah charity. But I cannot believe how biased Chris is when he's talking about Rangers. He was saying, it's embarrassing, it's not a penalty. It was a penalty. It's easily a penalty. It's not even a discussion to have. And I'm wondering, do VAR listen to the commentary during the game? Because I'm thinking Chris is going that strong here. He's trying to influence whoever could be listening in the VAR studio. VAR in Scotland is different. It's not at Stockley Park, is it? They've got their own VAR there. Do they listen to the commentary? I thought Chris has gone that mad on this. He's trying to influence someone in VAR." Report by Johnny McFarlane.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at QNReview and to tell your friends about our service